This is Andy Thomas from the Masculine Journey podcast, where we discover what it means to be a wholehearted man. Your Chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and for choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Previously on Lantern Rescue.
One piece that is not as often addressed is the actual traffickers themselves. So it worked out that I met Mark, and we sort of started approaching this problem set together, looking at who can do the rescues and then who can do the counter trafficking piece and how can we tackle this problem set together. Ultimately, what we'd like to do is bring freedom, not because we can provide anything more than just physical freedom, but ultimately we want to be a pointer to the freedom that Jesus gives us in eternity.
Welcome to Lantern Rescue, a ministry program dedicated to bringing light into the darkness of human trafficking. It's time to light the way to freedom. This is Lantern Rescue. We tell the stories, we talk about rescues, and we empower you to do something about it. William Wilberforce once said, "Let it not be said I was silent when they needed me." This is Lantern Rescue.
The subject today on Lantern Rescue is might be a little bit hard to listen to, but you know, I have a sense that God would really like for us to hear, you know, more of the picture of what goes on actually on these rescues. And Mark, you know, you brought up the subject of failed rescues, and what does that kind of bring up in your heart?
It's hard to, you know, often talk about, but it's not hard to forget because, as I just mentioned, you know, sometimes I forget all the faces of those we've rescued, but I don't forget the faces of those that we haven't, and those that, you know, whether it was during undercover operation or during the actual operation, that the rescue didn't occur. And we're, you know, talking about that today, and maybe we could pull out a couple of specific cases. And I'm going to let Ren, why don't you, because Ren, I know you have some too that are blazing in your mind and heart, and maybe you want to open up with one of those here as we start.
Yeah, so definitely one of the first ones that I think about is back in the beginning of Lantern, when we were first starting to work overseas, we were in the Dominican Republic, and we were doing some undercover work in a club, in a bunch of clubs, but one in particular sticks out. And, you know, undercover work's difficult for a lot of reasons, but we have our ways of doing it. So the team was in this club, and we're sitting there, and, you know, we come in, and we're, to them, we look like white tourists, and these clubs are known for certain things, so they assume we're there for a certain reason. And they sit us down in this back room, and I remember the whole club is like this red haze, because they had these red lights on, and a lot of parts of it were really dark, and if you went past the bathrooms and went back to the right, there were bedrooms, which, why would there be bedrooms in a dance club? You can kind of put that together. So we're sitting in this club, and we're in there for not too long, and I get up and go to the bathroom, and when I come back, I see that they have positioned these two very young-looking girls, and I would say maybe 14, 15 at most, and this is with makeup on, and I'm still thinking maybe 14, 15, so once you wipe that makeup off, they're probably going to look a lot younger. So I get back to my seat, and they've put these two girls really close to our table so that they are visible to us because they assume that the males that are with me on the team, on the undercover team, are interested in something like that.
Yeah.
So as the night progresses, we see the club owners keep feeding them alcohol and putting them at a table closer and closer and closer. And these girls, I can't fully explain the look of absence in their eyes. They weren't talking to each other. I assume they probably weren't even allowed to talk to each other. They're just looking straight forward, sometimes like glancing over at us, but just looking straight forward, hands on their knees, like just sitting there, not moving, not talking, not doing anything. They're clearly on display, clearly there to, to be sold. And Mark, I think you might want to say something about that night.
Yeah, you know, as Ren's talking about that, you can identify not just by the age that they're in the wrong place, you know, but also how they interact with one another. If there's a table of girls who are friends, in a club, they're laughing, they're talking, you know, they're drinking, they're doing all the things that friends do. When you're on display, they're not saying a word. They look fearful. They look afraid. They look propped up. They look like they're trying to present in a good way that they're, you know, for sale and not, you know, not displease their manager, their pimp, you know. And in that particular one, we'll never forget those two, you know, girls. And what occurred there was then we have means to get an offer, okay, to figure that out. And an offer was made for those girls through, you know, the manager. And it's when we start off by saying we call it a failed rescue because, you know, you're in a moment where you have two girls who are clearly being trafficked, who are minors. I think they were probably about 13. And we're in a position as a team trying to make a decision of, okay, we didn't come in for a rescue. We came in to do undercover work. We don't have the backup support right now. We're not armed in any way, except maybe, you know, concealed, but still we're not set up to do this and where this could go. And so those are hard because you have to then leave the facility. And a lot of times we have already arranged that we're going to return right back and make the rescue happen. But in that one, it was really soft intelligence. We really didn't have hard intelligence. It was an asset who said, yeah, I've got a couple of places we should check. Let's check. You know, we're just doing initial groundwork. But lo and behold, it uncovers that. And now we're at a place where we have to leave. And, you know, what are the steps that we can take? And you can't disclose. You can't. I know there are people who be like, oh, you should have got them. I mean, we fight that all the time. Like, man, we should have just fisted it out, you know, and taken the girls and tried to figure something out. But we didn't have anything established aftercare at that point. We didn't have documentation on who they were and who the owner was. We didn't have justice with us, you know. And it could have quickly unveiled our whole operation in that country if we'd had probably done something without thinking through it.
Not to mention, it sounds awkward to me. Just you've made an offer. Right. I mean, obviously, you're not carrying through with that. And the owner probably has some expectations on you guys.
Right. So, you know, a little bit of the conversation on those things goes like, you know, you step off and aside and there's drugs always involved. Drugs are always offered a lot as well. And then girls are offered and the specific girls are offered and they're even identified from what country they are, what age they are, you know, and then you, as you see, we're not going to go through that purchase. We're at that point, we're going to be like, no, it's not what I'm looking for, you know, or I'm looking for this hair color. You just make some other, you know, excuse. And there's other intelligence we try to gather from all that as well. But just on the 50,000 view there, that's what we're
So Renz, what's going through your heart as you see this situation like, oh, we're not going to be able to rescue these girls?
Yeah, so that's hard. It's always painful, and especially when we have to leave and you just get that final glance back and you just know that what's going to happen to them that night. And we do the best that we can. Like Mark was saying, I know a lot of people are going to have the comment that you should just grab them. And it's just not that simple. You have to, we've talked about this before about how we try not to harm the traffickers and we arrest them and we follow the laws. And that's a big thing with us is we follow the laws, because if me and the other undercover operators, if we get thrown in jail, we can't help anybody. And our whole operation will get jeopardized. So we just have to move forward on that. And what we try to do is we just try to keep the hope that when we do come back, that they'll be there and we'll be able to do it right. And we'll be able to get them aftercare. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately with those two girls, when we returned, when we had warrants, we had the right means to do what we had to do. Those particular girls weren't there. So that night I remember going back to the hotel and I went out on the balcony of my room and just laid there in the fetal position and just cried it out. I don't think I slept a wink that night. It's really hard. You know, it's something that we have to take on as a burden when we do operations like this, is knowing that not every person you see is going to get rescued. Not everyone is going to have a happy ending. And that's just the nature of this work. And it's a really dark aspect that we don't talk about a lot because it's hard to hear.
Yeah, but you did, when you came back, I'm assuming you did rescue some?
Yeah. It resulted in rescues because that particular brick and mortar place was an offender every night, you know, ended up, you know, being that. But those two, no. And I'm sure the whole team can see them. I mean, I know exactly what they look like, you know, the skin color, hair, the way it was presented, you know, everything about them. And unfortunately, no.
And so as you shut down that establishment and maybe another, right. You know, I guess the good news is that that's, you know, a lot of girls that don't end up there.
Right. Yeah, that's why it's important we get justice on our side and we work hard and do what we can. I mean, we've done rescue operations where we're not able to shut the place down, but, you know, repeat offenders, it builds a case against them. But definitely the goal of every operation is that we bring, you know, complete justice, make arrangements to make arrests and all that, you know. Very, very similar would be one in another country where pretty strong intelligence of a club, and this was an upper establishment club. You remember this one, Ren? Where
we had
intelligence that this place was selling girls, but because it was an upper level type of club, I mean, this is where the wealthy went and where, you know, political people went. It was very necessary that we had strong intelligence to take back to the judge so that he would willingly come with us. Otherwise, he didn't want to go near that place. You understand?
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to have that strong intelligence that this is what's happening here, pictures, videos, all that kind of thing. And, you know, we got into that place. I remember having questions about it, pulling up because, you know, I didn't know what a nicer club looked like in this particular country, to be honest with you. They don't all look that great. But this one was nice. It was really nice. And it was a place that I could see a lot of politicians and businessmen who fly into that country, especially in the telecommunication areas, you know, that this is a place they would go to. So the team, we all went up into that place. Of course, we have to protect our, you know, identity on the street. We got to move in a certain way that we get to the establishment not looking like, we try not to look so much like a law enforcement group that just showed up, you know. So we try to not look that we try to look like customers in some of these environments and go in and, you know, sit down. And that when we went up, it had a staircase. Remember entering into, you go through a couple of bouncers, like typical, you know, we went up a staircase, entered through the staircase. It was definitely, I guess the word swanky maybe for a third world country area, and went into the large room. It was a dancing environment, a food environment and club drinking environment. And went over and we took our position at a booth so that we could just observe, you know, the whole room as best as we could. And sure enough, we're sitting there and there is a table full of men with two girls. And I won't Ren maybe describe the presence of the girl. And maybe we do that after break. I know we're getting ready to take a break.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can tell this show, we've got some stuff that's a little bit hard to listen to, but gives you a real sense of what goes on these operations. We've also been joined by TC, I believe, now. TC, you with us?
Yeah, hopefully the phone works.
Yeah, well, you can tell we're loaded for the next segment of Lantern Rescue. Today's show, failed rescues, and you can even hear more the need for us to lock arms and pray with the team of Mark and Ren and TC and Alan. We got so much more. Lantern Rescue, coming right back at you. Lantern Rescue is a USA-based organization that conducts international rescue operations for people suffering from human trafficking. Lantern specializes in sending former U.S. Special Operations law enforcement and intelligence personnel to partner with host nations and assist them in creating specialized units to combat ongoing security problems, such as genocide, terrorism, and human trafficking. As a nonprofit charity, they offer services free of charge to their host nations. Human trafficking has grown into the second largest criminal activity in the world, reaching an estimated $150 billion in annual activity. Lantern Rescue has developed rapidly to combat trafficking. Lantern operates through a trained international network in order to rescue women and children from sex and labor slavery, and facilitates holistic aftercare services. They're gearing up for operations right now, and you can go to lanternrescue.org to see how you can support them financially. A Welcome back to Lantern Rescue. Today's show, kind of hard to listen to, but still necessary because, you know, clearly we can still pray for these girls on failed rescues. Yeah. We can pray for the team. But when we left the team, you know, they were in this swanky place upstairs and there were girls being trafficking and you needed to get a warrant.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of want if Ren can describe that moment. Ren, you mind doing that?
Yeah, no, I can. So we're upstairs and we're sitting at this table and we've got a couple of the local team members with us and they're trying to, you know, pretend that we're having a good time. They're getting us drinks and dancing around and but you can't really take your eyes off the girls. And these two girls were so young and they were dressed in just super tight, tiny dresses. They had wigs, makeup, the whole nine on. And the table, I think there had to have been like eight or nine guys sitting at this long table.
Yeah.
And they were just passing these girls around, like from one person to the other and just groping them and just, and the girls just looked horrified, but like they couldn't do anything, like just very helpless, very horrified. And they kept looking over at one of the only females in the room, which was me. So that's hard. It's hard to know that they're looking out. They're looking to you to help them. And there's in that moment, there's nothing I can do. There's, you know, I got the team with us. We're gathering evidence. We're doing recordings. We're getting what we need to get for a warrant. But in that moment, there isn't anything we can do. And you feel almost as dirty as the people abusing them because you're just, in a way, you're just kind of letting it happen. And that's hard. That's a heavy burden to carry.
I begged the senior investigator to let us go back in and take her.
Yeah, yelling is a better word to use for what you were doing that night.
Doing? I can't remember.
Yeah.
I'm actually glad to hear that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, because I was so, I mean, even in that moment, we were supposed to look like, okay, we're customers, but I'm pretty sure my whole face was like, I want to hurt somebody and, you know, and remove this girl from the situation. Because when I stood up out of the booth, these were clear businessmen. One of them just stood up, looked at me in the face and as TC talked about the smirks we talked about 1 week, literally just smirked at me. And I think he didn't know we were undercover or, you know, worked against trafficking. I think he just knew I just didn't appreciate what was happening and he didn't care. He just did not care. He literally stood me off there. And, you know, we all, you know, finished off there and, you know, tried to look normal going back out. And, I did get back to the street and, you know, pleaded my case. But
so can you kind of give us the details? You pleaded it, but you couldn't get the warrant or what happened?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, in this particular moment in time with this team in this country, we had done an operation that had been extremely dangerous prior to this because it involved a government level person owning a club and we had raided that club. And the result of that was that I thought, oh, man, first of all, I honestly thought our team was going to one by one disappear. You know,
yeah,
that's what happens. Judges and people get shot in these countries, you know, and but they didn't. But the pressure was on them so much, you know, that they had to have every, you know, T crossed and I dotted for this particular club, you know, because it as well was, you know,
right,
you know, a higher level club. And so I had to honor, you know, his wishes. I mean, I had to, you know, he's like, no, we cannot, it's not what we can do. Commissioner said, no, we've got to have the information tell us, but we can come back here. We can come back here, you know. And of course, he recognizes too. I'm like, but she probably won't be here. And he's like, she may not be, you know.
So did you go back?
We did go back. Yeah, we did go back. And we did go back, but, you know, not that girl, not that particular one, you know. And you just don't forget when you see a little kid at first in the dark and you're like, eh, is that kid, how old is that girl? You're trying to side glance it. And then you realize she's wearing a wig, you know, to be made to look older, to appear older when she's probably 12, you know? And then, you know, just, men in their late 30s and early 40s or like Ren said, they're kissing on her, groping her, you know, and, propping drinks down in front of her constantly, you know, that's what was happening.
Wow. So moving on.
Yeah.
TC, is there one that jumps out at you that sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and there she is?
I think about the failure thing with rescuing in particular. I think a lot of times even supporters of our rescues, I wonder sometimes what they think about whether or not we're successful if sometimes we rescue a girl a second time or something like that. I feel like failure is always something that we're potentially facing. My first rescue was a debt bondage case where we had gone to a field that was owned by a couple of businessmen from another country. They were very nonchalant about their slaves. We had paid the debt of several people that were going to go with us, and there was one young boy who was somewhere between 12 and 14 years old. He was hustling around. You know, I didn't know the language, but he was hustling around. He was finding everybody that had been paid for, their debt had been paid. He was helping me load them on. He was super happy, super, you know, aggressive in getting people out of there. And then when it was time to go, I said, all right, man, let's get on, let's go. He's like, no, I'm not one. I'm not one of them. So that little boy helped me rescue, I don't know, probably at least 20 people. And he didn't get to go. We were going to go back the next day, and that never happened. And then the other one was we had gone to the Christian slums in this same country on a second trip. And there's this beautiful little girl. She had, you know, she had pigtails and everything like that. And we knew that she was being trafficked out for sex in the evenings to the people from that country. And we thought, but she wasn't on a slave field yet. So we were going to go paid to get her before she got sold out permanently. And we went back to get her, and she never showed up. The parents never got her to us. So she had a beautiful smile. She was actually in some footage of this one, you know, this one rescue outfit's thing. She never made it out. To this day, I can still see her very plainly. But she never got rescued.
You know, TC, you and I've worked together on some labor slavery cases, right? And for me, I don't know about you, it's always hard because we're so dependent on the foreign asset to tell us which children are in under slavery and which ones are like the owner's children, right?
Right.
And sometimes you go in and you're like, I mean, you want to take every kid you see, you know, grab them as fast as you can, shuffle them, and it's hard. Some of those faces you see and you're looking at the foreign assets and he's saying, no, not that one, not that one. And you're like, that one looks just as bad as this one, you know?
Yeah. Literally hundreds left behind.
Right. And, yeah, exactly. And that really falls over into the problem that there's, you know, 41 million people in slavery, 25 million, you know, by the TIP report this year based in just labor slavery and sex slavery. So, the numbers are just overwhelming when it comes to some parts of the country and world.
Oh, when I listen to you guys, I mean, my heart is screaming like I suppose you were wanting to scream at that man. But to an extent, it gives us an opportunity to pray very specifically. And since you guys know the obstacles that you're really up against, what would you tell our listeners, you know, that they could be praying for in some of these countries that you could get some better cooperation or more authority, whatever? What is it that you would specifically ask for, Mark?
You know, we cover their prayers, and I think I would like to tell the listeners that, as TC just indicated, that failure is part of it. It's just the expectation is there that there are times you're going to fail. Failure is definitely not the opposite of success. It's part of success. You know, failure, true failure is just not trying anymore. You know what I mean? It's just giving up completely. But for us, I mean, failure for us is just add in some more determination. And it's part of the mix, you know, it's going to lead you to success, you know, and, I mean, of course we lean on God for that. We're not, you know, depending on our own flesh and effort, we're hoping for his favor and all that. But I think, you know, it is part of the formula that we have to face failure and we have to face the shortcomings of ourselves and even our own operations, and we're not perfect, and then put in some determination. So, right now with COVID, pray for our determination. You know, it's not easy. Everything we're trying right now is difficult, from our arrangements to flights to who we're meeting, who's working with us. And governments have changed over during COVID. Some of the agency groups, people have changed positions, jobs. You know, we need prayer that we add in our determination.
Ren, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the same thing as Mark there. With that kind of stuff, it's hard, you know. I would just say if anyone's willing to pray for the victims that are, you know, the ones that we didn't get to on these operations that we haven't had the chance to recover yet. And we don't ever give up. We're so hopeful that we'll get to them someday. But the ones that were there those nights that we never got to recover.
Wow. And how about you, TC, from your angle of it?
When I think about the rescues, I think there's so many different jobs or opportunities for the team to have, whether it's for other people to be a part of it, whether it's, you know, traveling or whether it's logistics or whether it's just being a liaison. So to me, it's almost like a small church where there are plenty of things to be done. People have to be willing to sometimes set ego aside, but for people to be willing to do the hard work and, you know, just see that the chain is broken because our chain is strong, so to speak, with a lot of people being involved doing their best.
Yeah, Mark, is there other team members that we could be aware of and praying for at this point? Because I know you guys continue to expand.
Sure, our core, you know our core group, John David. He's a great partner, and obviously he would cover your prayers as well. We have other team members that are working for us in D.C. and places right now that the Lord's expanding for us just in the last few months. We've taken this time not only to do some work online against trafficking and, but also to build out the infrastructure of who we are. Of course, everybody's a volunteer, but God keeps sending us some great volunteers.
Wow. And you know, everyone listening, you know what an asset you are to the team Atlanta Rescue, because we know God's touching your heart for the same thing He's touched their hearts with. And as you raise your shield of faith, that you're literally protecting their backs. And so thank you for listening. Thank you for taking your time. And thank you for your heart. And we'll look forward to our next episode of Lantern Rescue. So much more coming at you.
This is the Truth Network.